You're listening to the cycling podcast coverage of the Vuelta a España, brought to you in association with Lloyds. The Vuelta has a few more days to go until it reaches Madrid, and the next big appointment in the pro cycling calendar is the UCI Road World Championships, where the Great Britain team, sponsored by Lloyds, will compete across men's and women's road race and time trial events. Lloyds' investment in British cycling extends well beyond this season too. A multi-year sponsorship deal means that Lloyds will be supporting cycling from grassroots participation right up to elite level over the next few years. At the very top of the sport, Great Britain's men and women are building towards the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games in Los Angeles, and Lloyds will be backing them all the way as sponsors of the national team. Lloyds, there at every stage. Now it's over to Spain to join Daniel.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the cycling podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Buenas tardes, Dani Arribas. Salud, we haven't done this yet. We haven't clinked glasses yet. We are clinking because we're celebrating the fact that there was a time trial today. Danny was very excited about seeing a time trial. I was less excited. I'm generally less excited about time trials. But the important thing, once again, and this was at the same point that we started the show with yesterday, was that we did have a race today. It wasn't the race that we necessarily expected when we recorded yesterday, because that was before the course was shortened. More on that in just a moment, but we did have a race. Anyway, Danny, before we get into all of that, just explain or just tell the listeners, where are we currently?
Well, buenas tardes, Don Daniel and the listeners. We are here in a shadowed terrace, just close to the Pisuerga River here in Valladolid. Good weather today, even hot weather, shall we say. And just having a quick drink after
hot weather. Danny, you're a Spaniard, you can't say 24 degrees was hot.
It come
was
on, but after what we live these days, it was hot today.
It wasn't exactly caliente, but it was very pleasant. A little bit of wind, actually. I didn't hear too many riders talking about the wind on the course. Of course, wind was a big topic for the podcast and for the stage yesterday, but we didn't get too much. What did we see? Well, I'm going to spoil the result immediately, as we often do. Felipe Ogana won a Vuelta time trial in Valladolid for the second time in 2 years, because we were here in 2023. On that day, we did have a longer time trial, and on that day, Felipe Ogana did win the stage. And so history repeated itself today, Danny. No real surprises, I don't suppose. We suspected, even with the original route, we expected this might be one for the specialist, the Ganners. I tipped Stefan Kung yesterday, mainly because we had an interview with Stefan Kung. I was looking for a convenient excuse. Incidentally, Stefan Kung, before I forget, because I might forget, he performed well today. Let's see, where did he finish in the end? Danny, you've got the results in front
Sixth position, 11 seconds behind Ganna.
We're not going to hear his interview after the finish, but he did say that he'd been suffering from, well, he suffered from COVID before the Vuelta a España and is still recovering. And consequently, he wasn't too surprised that he didn't win today and fulfill my prediction in yesterday's podcast. But Danny, on the way here this morning, we were concerned, as I think everyone in the Vuelta was concerned, about what kind of spectacle we were going to get today, because as we did finish recording last night, we got the communique, as everyone on the Vuelta got the communique, stating that the course would be shortened from, what was the original length, Danny?
27 kilometers to 12.2.
12.2. Yeah. And this obviously was because of the protests we've seen over the last few days, and a shorter course was probably, this was certainly the logic, it was going to be easier to police, easier to secure. And Danny, what was taken out? The climb was taken out. We talked about that misleading profile yesterday, didn't we?
It was a little climb, let's say. I think it was 500 meters at 7% of gradient, but it was taken out. It was taken out the whole parkour going through the Parque Sol quarter here in Valladolid. So, yeah, for the security guards, police officers, and Guardia Civil, to be easier for them to control the race.
And I think we read in the local press, or we maybe in the national press, that there were going to be 500 police officers responsible for securing the course today. At the same time, meanwhile, we heard there were about 11 points on the course. I don't know whether that was the original course, where people had been called by various, whether it was political parties, pressure groups, to assemble. And well, not just assemble, but there was a call to action to block or boycott. Boycott is the word that's being used a lot in Spanish, but has a slightly different meaning in English. If you were boycotting the time trial, that would mean you weren't attending it. Mm. In Spanish, boycott means disturb, really, doesn't
it? Exactly, exactly. Yeah, exactly. The exact words from this political party was just to block the Vuelta a España here in Valladolid.
So we didn't know what we were going to see. All we did know was that it had, well, this time trial had changed. And this obviously held implications for the general classification, because overnight, Jonas Vingegaard led the Vuelta a España by 50 seconds, having gained an extra 2 seconds over João Almeida. We talked about the various permutations last night, who was going to be better over that original distance. And a shorter time trial, our feeling this morning was that the shorter time trial would favour Jonas Vingegaard, certainly as the general classification stands, and it would penalise João Almeida. Danny, when we arrived in Valladolid this morning, it wasn't really this morning, it was early afternoon, I made my way to the Visma Lisa Bike bus and spoke there to Jesper Morku, who is the direct sportif, the first director for Visma Lisa Bike on this race, and asked him what their reaction was last night to this route change. Here's Jesper Morku this morning.
Well, Jesper, I guess it was about 7:30 last night, around about, when we found out that the course was changing today. Was it exactly the same for you, or did you have any advance notice?
No, it was also the same for us. When we got the communique, we also got the new parcours. We was waiting a little bit on the communique, so we also had a bit in mind that maybe something was coming up.
Easy to say for us, I know, but on paper it looks like good news for Jonas.
Yeah, that we will see later today. If Jonas gonna beat Almeida today, then we will say it will be better with a longer time trial. If it's the opposite, then Almeida will say it will be better for him with a longer time trial. But normally Almeida is really good on those short ones, but of course it's easier to take more time on 27Ks than a 12K.
Just break it down for us. How much does it change? I guess obviously the corners become more important now relatively, but what else does it change? How these two efforts are different, 10 or 12K versus 27K?
Of course, the first technical part will have a bigger impact, but also you take a little bit the hard part of the parkour out, with the little bit hilly part where you could really smash with some power. Now it's more the real roller part that's still left. So it's changed the parkour a little bit, but yeah, in the end, I think it will be the same for the most of the riders.
And a lot of speculation about Jonas's health the last few days. He himself said he wasn't feeling great last week. Yesterday, again, people were speculating, is he still ill? I think he even said something to that effect. I mean, how's he today?
He's okay. He's not ill anymore. That was a little bit the middle week. But of course, when you're ill in the middle of a grand tour, that also give a little bit to your fatigue level. So that also what I think we saw a little bit yesterday. But he also had a not so good day yesterday, so we quite hoping, and he hoped himself also, that he will have a better day today and also the next coming days.
So, Danny, Visma, understandably not wanting to sound too jubilant, they will be keen for everyone to consider this. If Jonas Vingegaard does go on to win the Vuelta a España, they will be keen for there to be no caveats or asterisks. So it was sort of a case from their point of view of, well, the best man will still win the Vuelta a España. Incidentally, at UAE, well, they had a long transfer, I know. I don't know where Visma was staying last night. It might also have been in Valladolid. But UAE was certainly staying here, and that meant a very long journey from the finish yesterday to Valladolid. And they got the news last night on the bus while they were travelling, and it didn't go down very well, as you can imagine.
Since from yesterday's finish to Valladolid, the two people know is about 3.5 hours, even 4. So it's a quite long transfer to Valladolid. And yeah, I think they were not that happy, or at least not as happy as Visma, shall we say.
3.5 hours to chew on that bitter news.
Yeah, and just to hear that from like being in the bus when you are just expecting to go asleep and not take any concerns on the race.
Indeed. Danny, let's find out who fared better between João Almeida and Jonas Vingegaard and everything else that happened on today's stage, in today's Jamonómetro.
El Jamonómetro de Michele Peracci.
Danny, am I mistaken, or is Valladolid quite well known for its jamón? Everywhere's well known for its jamón. Is this not a jamón kind of an area?
No? The region could be, but not a city, okay. I'll say.
Okay, never mind. Maybe we'll talk about Valladolid delicacies later on in the episode. But Danny, first of all, how many jamones for this time trial that you were so excited about?
I would give it, let's say, 3.5 with the shortened stage. Could be better with the original course.
I'm going to give it 3.5 simply because time trials are a lot easier to summarize than road stages, so that makes our job slightly easier. We'll still probably contrive to make the odd cock up. Anyway, here is roughly what happened. Well, Filippo Ganna, very early in the day, wasn't it, Daniel? Very early after the time trial had started.
Yep.
He took first position and was on the hot seat. His time for those 12.2 kilometers, it was 13 minutes exactly. That was an average speed of 56.244 kilometers per hour. We wondered at that point, was anyone going to challenge him? Well, several riders did challenge him, particularly the first two time splits. It was very close between Ganna and Ivo Oliveira. I think they had, was the 1 second or almost the same time, the first couple of splits. But then Oliveira fell behind. And that was really the story of the time trial. A lot of riders matching or even bettering Ganna's time in the first part of the course, but then Ganna's time proved unassailable later on. And Danny, we saw Jay Vine, I mentioned Oliveira, we saw Jay Vine, his teammate, come close. We saw Stefan Kung look relatively close for about half of the course, and then he fell behind as well. We saw some other names that we wouldn't have expected to see close to the top of the leaderboard. De Pestel of Decathlon.
That's true.
I think he had the fastest time through the first time check, did he not?
Yeah, he did indeed. And in just 3 seconds better than Ganna. And then at the end, he lost 33 seconds to the Italian rider.
There you go. And that was obviously the battle for the stage win. As far as the general classification was concerned, well, João Almeida went through the first timing point on the same time as Vine, Pedersen, De Pestel, and Ethan Vernon as well. Had done a very fast time at that first timing point. Second timing point, well, Jay Vine was the fastest there, but Almeida was 7 seconds behind him and ahead of Ganna at that point. 2 seconds ahead of Ganna. However, at the finish, João Almeida would finish, well, he would end up third. Jay Vine would finish second on the time trial, less than a second behind Filippo Ganna. Almeida third, 7 seconds down. And what did Jonas Vingegaard do? Well, he performed creditably. And I certainly hope it was credible. It was creditable as well. And he finished in ninth position and he lost 11 seconds to João Almeida over 12.2 kilometers. That, of course, wasn't the only GC battle, because we've been talking a lot about the battle for the podium, the battle for third place, in particular Jai Hindley and Tom Pidcock, the main contenders for that. Of course, Pidcock currently in third, or he was before today. Danny, Pidcock won the battle.
Yeah, he did.
He did, because he took 3 seconds out of Jai Hindley.
He took 3 seconds out of Jai Hindley. They finished in positions in a row, 22nd and 23rd. And the other rider who's, let's say, contesting for the podium, Giulio Pellizzari, finished 36th, just 38 seconds behind Almeida, which means 17 seconds behind Tom Pidcock.
Another sort of private battle going on for sixth place between Ricitello and Gal. Well, Ricitello moved up a place today. He is now 3 seconds ahead of Felix Gal. Thanks for their time trial today. I'm going to give you the results. I'm going to give you the top 10. We've already said Ganna won. Jay Vine was less than a second behind. Almeida, 7 seconds. Bruno Almirai was fourth, 9 seconds behind. Oliveira, 10 seconds behind Ganna. Kung, 11 seconds behind. Kelland O'Brien, very good performance by him, 14 seconds behind. Alex Segert, 15 seconds behind. Vingegaard, 9th, 18 seconds behind. And Dan Haller in 10th, 18 seconds behind. The new general classification. Vingegaard leads João Almeida by 40 seconds now. How is that? Did he not?
No, because the organizers gave the lead to Almeida today in today's stage to 10 seconds, not 11.
I thought it was 11. Okay. Yeah. Bit of GC tax there for João Almeida. So he is now 40 seconds behind Jonas Vingegaard. Tom Pidcock has solidified his third place, shall we say. He's 2.39 down on Vingegaard. Hindley is 3.18 down on Vingegaard. So that's close to 40 seconds, is that? No,
yeah, 39.
40 seconds? 39 is very close to 40 seconds. And then another minute behind his teammate Hindley is Pelizzari. 4.19 behind Vingegaard. Another minute behind Pelizzari, more or less, is Ricciatello, 5.17. And as we've already said, Gao is 3 seconds behind Ricciatello. And that is generally where we've been concluding our roundup of the GC. In the points competition, no change. Pedersen leads easily. I think he might mathematically almost have won that competition already. And Pelizzari leads the white jersey competition by 58 seconds from Ricciatello. And that is a two-horse race. Danny, that concludes the roundup of today's 18th stage time trial. We're now going to hear from some of the protagonists, as we always do. First of all, João Almeida. Was he going to be still seething, Danny, about the route change that we saw today? Would he have, well, did he think that he could have doubled what he gained on Vingegaard today on the original route? We are about to find out. You also spoke to Jay Vine, some interesting stuff from him. And then finally, we're going to hear from Tom Pidcock, who was very satisfied indeed with his time trial.
Chad, looking at the results, 11 seconds on Jonas, the guy you're chasing for that red jersey. We can assume you maybe have wanted a longer time trial today to get more time.
Yeah, maybe. I guess you'll never know, right? In the end of the day, the same for everybody. But yeah, I think a little bit of extra hope for these last 2 days. Of course, without counting the last day, but... But yeah, I think it was a good idea. I did my best, so that's it.
How did you take the news last night when it was to be shortened? I mean, did you have full confidence coming into this stage that you could put time on Jonas?
Yeah, I mean, also, I think a few years ago with DCT was almost the same. I felt quite good, so I think it was a good idea for me. But yeah, fortunately, we had to change it, and I think it's still good we had the race today, so it is what it is.
Now what, Zhao? Is first place a possibility, and how is that possible from here to Madrid?
I mean, just going full gas every day and see how it goes. But Saturday is a really hard climb, so really hard stage overall. So anything can happen.
Zhao, do you have any thoughts on tomorrow and possible Echelons?
Yeah, we know tomorrow is crosswind, the last part, so we need to be attentive and focused. Maybe it splits, maybe it won't, we'll never know. I mean, we're not going to know eventually, but yeah, now, yeah, taking it day by day. First tomorrow, then Saturday, and then it's last day.
But is tomorrow a day for gaining time, trying to use the echelons?
Yeah, of course, but I think the main goal is always being the front that don't lose time. But yeah, it's all. If you're in the front, you're going to be fine.
João, if you don't win this World Series, do you think one day you'll look back and be disappointed that it has been so badly affected by external circumstances?
Not really. I think it wouldn't really make such a big difference. So until now, so far, I did my best every day, what I could. So I have no regrets. And yeah, if I don't win, it's because Jonas or whoever win was stronger.
And just last one, it looked as though Jay had permission to go for the stage today and the other riders maybe took it a little bit more easily, is that right?
Yeah, and a few riders, it's also a short effort, so why not go full gas? And yeah, the team was pretty good again, and And yeah, Jay is it's a monster. Chapo Hame is a really good rider, and yeah, I think as Filippo Ganna was amazing today.
Shame that the course got shortened, because I think that would have been a lot beneficial. Maybe take some more time, but also maybe not, because sometimes in the shorter TTs you see more of a gap, so we'll never know. And then Bulamundo on Saturday. This is really important for us. Having a hard quarter, and yeah, I think we did make a difference throughout the stage to make it really a nutritional race. That's what he seems to like.
Before Bola del Mundo stage, are you kind of aware in the team of a possibility of crosswinds in tomorrow's stage or not?
No, I didn't. We had a look, and it's headwind, and it's not very strong wind either. I mean, that was 2 hours ago. Maybe it's changed, but as of
2 hours ago?
No.
Okay. And how would you explain for the cycling spectators that you are the best team without any doubt in the race with six stage wins already? But for instance, in yesterday's climb, we saw just four Visma riders and just Joao from your team. How would you explain that?
I mean, to explain, like I've been telling my wife, a little bit of knowledge is actually quite dangerous. I mean, in that moment, we were there, and the car was there, and Joao had told us he didn't want any pace being set or anything like that. So, in that moment, if the car's there, they can give him a spare bike, there's no problem there. He told us, I don't want to do anything, so I just follow, so save your legs. And in that point, at 14%, if he doesn't want to follow the wheel, he has to follow the wheel. So, I mean, you do what the boss tells you to do.
Last one for me. How would you rate this Vuelta, this overall Vuelta, if it finished like it is right now?
I mean, it's really nice, but to come so close and have so many like question marks on, you know, could we have got more time on a certain stage, or, you know, to come down so close is such a shame. And I know I've been missing Jiguel since after he left the tour, and this course really did suit him. So to finish right now with the results we have, it's bittersweet. Of course we want to win the race, so, but also Jonas is 2 times Tour de France winner. So yeah, mixed feelings.
But do you think the win is still possible, right?
I mean, for sure we're not gonna not try, but you know, we haven't had everything go our own way.
Okay, thank you, mate.
Yeah, you said six stage wins, but it's seven.
Yeah, corrections corner tonight.
Okay.
I think that was probably my best ever time trial, looking at the numbers I was doing. So, yeah, I can be pretty happy. I mean, we didn't focus at all on the time trial before this. You know, we just wanted to improve my climbing and everything. I did a team time trial session and a team time trial. So, I don't know, I felt super strong, to be honest.
Were you... in hindsight, is it better it was a little bit shorter, or would you like to do longer time trial considering how you're going?
I don't think there's many people you would ask today that would want to do a longer time trial, to be honest with you.
Do you think you're that much closer to a podium in the Vuelta a España?
Yeah, I mean, I after Bilbao, I mean, this stage took a lot out of me mentally, like, to deal with it. And yeah, I think I suffered in the last part of the second week, but this week I feel, again, like I did in the first part of the race. I feel super good, so yeah, I'm definitely confident, but not getting complacent.
Well, we saw at the Red Bull 1-2 Pellizzari Hindley yesterday, they're not going to give up, they're going to attack you to the Madrid finish.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing, you know, but I think, yeah, it's the first time I've ever been in a situation I got to, you know, for me, finish on the podium is bigger than a stage win, as much as I'd like to win, but yeah, difficult to balance it sometimes when, yeah, you feel like, yeah, I mean, getting a win in a Save the Grand Tour's a big deal.
Tom, what's it like to race with all this speculation going around about stages being shortened, the race being shortened? Is it hard to focus?
No, because I don't pay any attention. I don't get involved. I'm not in the riders group. Damien does all that. So I just keep focused on what's important. Otherwise, it's easy to when you're tired. It'd be nice if it was shorter time trial. Time trials cancelled. Better just to focus on what we're supposed to have on the table.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Babbel. Are you planning to visit one of the Grand Tours next year? Perhaps you'd like to go to the Giro d'Italia or Tour de France, but you're a bit nervous because you don't speak the language. Well, with Babbel, the language learning app that makes speaking a new language with confidence fun, you can start speaking in just a few weeks. Babbel's conversation-based technique quickly teaches you words and phrases that you'll actually use in the real world. I've used Babbel to improve my Italian from virtually non-existent to the point where I'm able to converse in hotels and restaurants, which, let's face it, is important when you're on holiday, and it really enhances your enjoyment of being away. There are 15 languages to choose from, including Italian, French, Spanish and Dutch, so Babbel has cycling's world tour covered. It's a bit like having a private language tutor to call on whenever you want, because the lessons are flexible and they fit into your daily routine and they suit any learning style. There's engaging interactive dialogue right from the start, speech recognition so you don't fall foul of the pronunciation police, and Babbel's games help with sentence building, and there's even culture bites so you learn a little bit more about the language too. The progress tracker and the fact that you can make real progress with just 10 or 15 minutes a day on the Babbel mobile app or website keeps you really motivated. So which language are you going to learn? To get started, we're teaming up with Babbel to gift you 55% off subscriptions, but it's only for our listeners at babbel.com/cycle. Get up to 55% off at babbel.com/cycle. That's babbel.com/cycle. Babbel.com/cycle. Rules and restrictions may apply, but get talking with Babbel.
Well, Danny, the main points there. João Almeida, not bitter at all. I asked him, would there be a sense of sort of anticlimax about this Vuelta a España, a sense of what might have been if he doesn't win it because of the shortened stages? And we're going to talk a bit about this later in the part. Just this, the sense that we are watching a Grand Tour that's been heavily affected, jeopardized, some would even say sort of gutted by events off the road. But João Almeida said no, the best man will win if it's Jonas Vingegaard at the end of stage 21. We think we're going to have 21 stages, so that is still to be determined as well. Then Jonas Vingegaard will deserve the title. Jay Vine telling you there, giving a very thorough, comprehensive explanation for why we were maybe barking up the wrong tree yesterday when we said that João Almeida was isolated again, and his teammates should have given him more assistance in this Vuelta a España. And then we also heard from not delirious, but a very, very satisfied Tom Pidcock, who sounded almost surprised at how good he's feeling and how he's really improved the game in this third week. And that third place of his is looking very, very secure now. But Danny, those were the main points from those interviews. What were your main takeaways from the day?
I think the main thought for today in many people's mind is that the shortened TT result is that maybe without the shortened course, we could, and I say this as we could, have seen other result, or which is the same thing, a bigger gap between Almeida and Vingegaard, which may be translated into, or would have been translated into, a bigger or a smaller, let's say, a gap between those two in the general classification. So I think it's a pity for many people to just have experienced things like that.
Yeah, do you know what, Danny? I would have to look closely again, and I must confess I haven't done all of my homework before tonight's episode, because I should have looked at the original route, compared it to the route we did, because one thing that came through when I spoke to riders after the finish was that, I talked about earlier how it was very close through the first half of the course. In the last part of today's course, what I was told was that that was where aerodynamics really played their part, and well, and that was where the speeds were higher as well. I don't know if that's borne out by
the biggest
statistic. Yeah, but on the big straights. And if the bit that was chopped off, who knows, we should be able to find out if we can be bothered to look. But the bit that was chopped off may even have favoured the UAE riders and João Almeida even more. So it might not just be a case of doubling the advantage that Almeida took. It may have been that he would have gained 30 seconds. Obviously, this is pure speculation. He may also have gained less time on a longer time trial. We simply don't know. But judging by the UAE riders' performances today, and not all of them went for it, but three of them did, Jayvine, Oliveira and Almeida, their time trial setup, and I think I mentioned this yesterday, how their time trial setup is reputed to be very good, very effective on fast courses, flat courses. So I think they will be cursing their luck a little bit.
Yeah, could be. It's so interesting that thing, because just looking at the results, Almeida finished the TT today with almost 56 kilometers per hour, while Jonas Vingegaard not reach the 55 kilometers per hour in a, let's say, short TT. But it is true that it was a very straight TT, which could favor the UAE team Emirates riders.
So our expert analysis at the end of this TT is that if you ride at a faster average speed than someone else, then you gain time on them.
That's how intelligent we are.
That's what people tune in for. Yes, but now, with the 40 seconds, I mean, we talked about it yesterday. They're so closely matched, or they have been so closely matched on general classification, that it is quite difficult to imagine, to envisage João Almeida taking out 40 seconds. Of course, you factor in time bonuses. I just think that it is a daunting margin still. It requires, well, we heard Jayvine, I think, in your interview, Danny, talk about their plan, already sort of reveal a little bit of their plan, try and fatigue Vingegaard as much as possible before the Bola del Mundo in a couple of days time. But again, based on what we've seen so far, I think 40 seconds is a tall order, whereas if it had been 20 is a small gap in the last kilometer and the bonus seconds, you know, if someone else takes second or third. So I think it's going to be difficult. Slightly disappointed in a way that there isn't more fire in João Almeida's belly. He doesn't really live up to his the nickname, the whole Botaluma nickname and sort of epithet in that respect, because he always seems so incredibly sort of philosophical and phlegmatic and zen about everything.
Kind of satisfied. He seems like almost satisfied with the result, which I understand, because Jonas Vingegaard is the rider we all know he is, but yeah, just having just a disadvantage of 40 seconds and three stages to go.
I found myself thinking when I left the UAE bus this afternoon, Danny, that if I'd gone up to João Almeida and said to him, listen, João, Jonas, we've just been speaking to Jonas and he's just insulted members of your family, João still would have said, well, it was okay.
I understand.
Fine. I understand. He's a nice guy. Anyway, he's a good sport. He's a good sport, João Almeida. He's certainly not a bad loser that we've seen. Anyway, in the battle for third, Danny, Hindley, we said yesterday that Hindley was a better time trialist, or his past record suggested that he was a slightly better time trialist than Tom Pidcock. That proved not to be the case today, but very little between them, very little, just 3 seconds. And as for the other Red Bull rider, Pellizzari, we talked yesterday about his potential as a time trialist. He actually didn't go too well today, proving that there's a bit of work to do there. To only finish 36th, 45 seconds behind, I was quite surprised by that. I don't think it's going to cost him fifth place. He does have that minute cushion over Riccitello, but I think the raw materials are certainly there with Pellizzari, but he obviously has a lot of developing to do as far as time trialing is concerned. Pidcock, interestingly, in that interview talking about how little preparation he'd done for today, how few time trials he'd done, and presumably there wasn't a whole lot of sort of technical stuff, wind tunnels and time on the time trial bike either. Danny, I suppose the other big takeaway, and certainly if you were standing at the finish line, well, we were both standing there for most of the afternoon, was, well, there was a big question mark over today's time trial. We wondered whether we were going to get further disruption. And speaking to riders, we were gleaning more from speaking to riders than we were from watching the pictures on TV screens. You couldn't really necessarily see everything the crowd were doing. But the riders were reporting back to me anyway, Danny, I don't know if it was the same with you, that there was nothing too worrying or certainly violent or vociferous at the, or maybe vociferous, but nothing, certainly nothing violent at the roadside today.
Yeah, indeed. They were not worried about what they saw today, because I think what we saw in Bilbao and other stages is what really happened, the worst thing that happened for them. So not a really bad day in that sense for them, for the riders I've talked to as well.
What there were, Danny, today, and I don't know if you were privy to any of these, but there were quite a lot of rumours about what might happen over the next few days. Not necessarily in terms of the details of other protests that are planned, but in terms of contingency planning by the Vuelta a España. There was a rumour going around that the Vuelta could finish today, or it could finish tomorrow, or it could finish the day after. And of course, it's due to finish on Sunday. Obviously nothing is confirmed to that effect. I would be surprised, frankly, after today passed off without any serious incident, that if we did get another communique like the one we got last night telling us that there wasn't going to be a stay tomorrow or in 2 days' time, but who knows.
Yeah, I would say the main red point now for the organizers is the La Vola del Mundo finish, because not just the protests we have seen until now, but also the ecologists, that they're just claiming there is space to be free from La Vuelta and these kind of races. So I think that would be the red point. But of course, the finish, the last stage in Madrid, could be another for the organizers. By the way, neither Kiko García or Fernando Escartín, both technical directors of the race, wanted to talk today. I think it's a decision they've made after what happened in the previous stages. Just to give a quick background to the audience, Kiko García gave an interview, a long interview to the Spanish media, and his name after that was linked with some political side, some headlines that probably he didn't want to be in, and the organization didn't want to him to be in. So I think their message to that was just not to talk.
Yeah, he expressed a lot of sympathy for the Palestinian cause, didn't he?
He said indeed that the only solution is that the one that we are all thinking of, which could be, shall we say, the Israel Premier Tech just leaving the race.
Yeah. I did speak to an Israel Premier Tech rider today who didn't want to be named, but did talk to me about what a sort of harrowing experience, or harrowing and just deflating experience, the last few days have been for him and them. Danny, we were at the finish line. Again, a lot of chanting directed sort of indiscriminately, really, at all of the riders. There were a couple of instances where, for example, there was an Israel Premier Tech rider just maybe 15 meters down the road, and I don't know whether out of confusion or just because a rider from another team was right in front of them, then the protesters were sort of directing their ire at the rider right in front of them rather than sort of turning their heads towards the Israel Premier Tech rider. I don't know whether that's a reflection on how much the protesters do or don't know about the Vuelta a España.
Yeah, no, they were screaming to every rider, to be honest, because I've seen them just maybe screaming to the riders who has a similar kit to Israel, but also to Visma, Lisa Vike riders, also to Abel Balderson, who has the Spain flag, big Spain flag, as a TT champion in his kit. So
there was one semi-comical, I don't know whether I should say it was semi-comical, little sort of altercation between the pro-Palestine protesters and a gentleman who was brandishing a Spain flag, and every pro-Palestine chant he tried to drown out with his own chorus of, I can't remember what he was singing, but some sort of patriotic.
España is not that mysterious.
Was that all he was shouting? Yeah. And things got quite feisty. Things got very feisty, in fact, so much so that this gentleman, who's an older gentleman, he was sort of escorted to the other side of the road by a policeman, and there was no further incident or escalation of that little situation. Danny, just to, as a point of order as well, I didn't mention this yesterday, and I should have, and I double-checked it. Yesterday, we heard Jack Haig talking about the sort of resolution among the riders yesterday morning to stop and neutralize the race effectively if there was any further incident. And he said this was the option. There were three options that were voted for by the riders in the CPA group, and this was the chosen option. I actually clarified today with Jack what the other two options were. One option was not to race at all. The third option was to stop if an incident did occur, and then all decide on the road, sort of in the spur of the moment. And I'm pretty glad they didn't choose that option. As it transpired, there were no disturbances yesterday, so they didn't need to take that action. But based on past evidence of bike riders trying to find a solution amongst themselves in the middle of a race, I'm not sure that would have ended too well. Danny, just on the atmosphere for the riders, those who aren't involved in the fight for the red jersey or other prizes here, how does it feel for them? Does it feel to them a bit like it does for us, that it's slightly anticlimactic? This is a race that's been overshadowed to a certain extent ruined. Is that how they feel as well? I asked Eddie Dunbar of Jayco Alula after the finish today just what the atmosphere is like.
Well, Eddie, it's obviously a bit of a strange last few days for a Grand Tour. From our point of view, it feels as though some of the momentum has gone out of it with stages being shortened and so on and so forth. Just curious, what does it feel like sort of in the team, in the bunch?
Yeah, I think it's the exact same feeling. I think a lot of riders are just kind of done with it. What can you do, all we can do is just show up every day, and our job is to ride our bikes and race when we're told to race, and that's what we're trying to do. But it's not the most exciting, or it's not the nicest atmosphere to be working in, really,
So Danny, Eddie Dunbar confirming to me there that it is a bit of a strange feeling in the peloton. It doesn't feel like stage 18 of a normal Grand Tour. There is an element of, I'm not saying on Eddie's part, but of maybe of going through the motions, or certainly very much looking forward to Madrid and wanting to get there, really, and take whatever opportunities. And for most riders like Eddie Dunbar, there's only going to be one opportunity at best. In the remaining stages, that's the Bolo del Mundo stage. Try and take those opportunities, but really just they'll be pretty glad to see the back of this Vuelta a España. Danny, this morning, it wasn't this morning, we are cheating here, and a bit of dissimulation here on the part of the Cycling Podcast, because we're going to pretend that it was this morning. It was a conversation you had yesterday, the Encuentro del Día. As regular listeners know, this week we're talking to riders about their sort of social media side hustles, their efforts to bypass the traditional media in their communication with their audiences.
Shouldn't say like that.
Well, but it's the truth, isn't it? We're being put out to pasture, let's be honest, by the riders. Fortunately, in this case, Carlos Verona is a rider who, he's very affable in his dealings with the media, and he's someone we certainly bear no malice towards. Carlos also maintains a detailed blog, I guess we should call it a blog. He's on Strava, or he writes very detailed Strava entries where he gives a lot of information about his racing. Danny, yesterday, we'll pretend it's today, you spoke to Carlos about precisely this in the Encuentro del Día.
El Encuentro del Día, the meeting of the day.
So here we are with Carlos Verona. Carlos, let's talk to the audience of what are you doing on Strava after every stage.
Well, I try to share there my opinions or my ideas or my vision of the race from inside the peloton, no? It's a daily blog that I'm doing since I became pro in 2013. I used to do it in Facebook, but since I lost my Facebook account and then I couldn't do it anymore, so I thought it would be nice to do it on Strava because at the end is where it's really the cycling community. It's true that I had lost a little bit of audience from Facebook because in Facebook at the end was much easier to become this content viral. But still in Strava, I think many people like it, and for me it's something nice after the stage. Just I do write during 5 minutes my thoughts on the stage.
Why did you start doing it after the stage?
I don't know. I always like to write, to make a small recap, and go to the next page. And for me, it's always nice to write down what's happening in the bunch and also try to share with the people what's going on inside the bunch, no? Because sometimes it's not easy to understand everything from television, even for the TV commentators, because sometimes you don't feel what's going on in the bunch. And I had the feeling that it was necessary to express what's going on from inside and telling to really say our point of view, no? The point of view of the cyclists, that sometimes we don't have voice in television.
Do you think it has changed during these years since you started doing it until now? Because I have the feeling that today riders are more cautious, let's say, about people, things they say or not say in a public way. So what do you think on that?
I think I've been always happy to talk and to express myself from the respect and share with the people my point of view. And I think this is the right thing, and I will keep doing that.
So don't you think it has changed very much since 10 years ago or 15
not,
years ago?
Not a lot. Also, I think cycling has been always kind of a closed sport, no? Like not so open to the general public, because sometimes cyclists, we are always in our own bubble. And I think with social media, we have had the opportunity to be closer to the people that is supporting us on the side of the road for hours until we pass. And I think this is the nice thing of social media for our sport.
Do you have other riders liking what you do on Strava?
Yes. I think for sure, at least I didn't hear any negative comments.
Okay, that's good. And are we expecting you to do it for many Grand Tours to come or not?
Yeah, for sure, until I retire. I start this when I start, and I will do it until I retire, and probably when I finish I will try to make a recap of everything and write a book.
That sounded like a book to me, so...
Yeah, I will try to do this one day.
It's something you really like to...
Yeah, I like to write, I like to... I think it's also a way to give back something to cycling, and this is my 17th Grand Tour. I have lived many different stories, many different circumstances, and I think it would be nice to put it all down together in the same book.
And last but not least, before you go, do you think before that book we're going to see your opinions on other social media than Strava, or just Strava?
Strava is where I'm most most open to discussion. Then I use also Instagram. For me, it's also a nice social media platform where you can share more your daily things on stories. And this is the two platforms I use.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Well, Danny, that was Carlos Verona telling you that, he intends to record some of his memories in a written memoir about his career at some point. Book writing, I'm not sure that's an endeavour I would recommend, Carlos. If you're listening, I'd keep blogging, son. Anyway, Danny, we have three stages left. We hope we have three stages left of this Vuelta a España. And glory be, is that a phrase in English? Tomorrow we're going to another wonderful wine region where we're starting in Rueda. We're going to talk now about tomorrow's stage and, in fact, about yesterday's dinner.
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Danny, yesterday's dinner. We were in León, beautiful León. We were sitting outside in one of the main squares in León, and we had some fantastic wine. I'm going to mention the wine, Bierzo wine, because we'd been in Bierzo. They always try to order local wine. Mm. We'd been in Bierzo earlier in the day, so I was allowed to order Bierzo wine, which is made with a Mencia grape. Petalos del Bierzo, for those who are Bierzo aficionados and know individual properties. It was excellent. Anyway, Danny, what about the food? Highlight for you?
Yeah, undoubtedly the highlight was the canelón de carrillera y cacahuetes, which means meat cannelloni with peanuts, let's say.
Yeah, I always feel conflicted about this when in Spain you find the cannelón, because that to me feels like a cultural appropriation of an Italian dish.
Oh yes, it is as the aerial thing in the other way, let's say.
I don't know. I think we need to sort of deep dive into the in the absence of other intriguing storylines, we need to deep dive into the history of cannelloni. Who lays claim to the origin of cannelloni? Anyway, it was a good restaurant, wasn't it, in León?
Pretty good.
Yes. Danny, do we have a delicious speciality in terms of bike racing waiting for us tomorrow?
We have a very good stage for tomorrow.
Danny, interestingly, you're looking at a profile that's very different from the official Vuelta profile. And I think that's just the scale that's used, because on the Vuelta profile, it looks extremely flat. It's a high stage. Oh, no, it is the same stage. It's a high stage because we are on the Meseta Central, the big sort of high plateau in the middle of Spain, kind of the Spanish equivalent of the Massif Central, but not as hilly. It's actually quite flat, the Meseta Central, mm-hmm. a lot of it. So we are sort of starting at almost 800 meters above sea level, and the finish is 1,200 meters above sea level. Danny, it reminds me at first glance, and I think I've said this already in the Vuelta, of the stage in 2019 to Guadalajara, which produced fantastic, sensational racing. The wind tore the race to shreds. If I'm not mistaken, Philippe Gilbert won that stage. Nairo Quintana gained time. I remember that. And it was, as I say, sensational. However, Danny, I have to tell you, and I think we've heard a couple of people already in interviews refer to this, the consensus among a lot of the teams is the wind's not going to blow in the right direction or at the right speed tomorrow to wreak the same sort of havoc. I looked at the forecast earlier on today, and there were wind speeds of around 10 kilometers an hour, 12 kilometers an hour predicted, which is not strong, but if it's in the right direction, it can still split a bike race. However, Jay Vine talks about a headwind.
Yeah, he did, and they were neither in UAE and Visma, they are not expecting, at this time at least, any crosswind for tomorrow's stage. So probably it's going to be, I don't know, do you think it's going to be a breakaway stage?
Well, it's difficult to say, Danny. It's difficult to say. I think possibly, again, speaking to riders after the finish today, most of them seem to think that the last breakaway opportunity will be stage 20 and not tomorrow. I don't know whether they're expecting. I didn't speak to anyone from Alpecin, and I didn't even ask anyone about that eventuality that Alpecin might control the race. Obviously, Philipsen's still here, and there are other fast riders still here. You know, Mads Pedersen's still here. So it could potentially be controlled tomorrow. It's a relatively short stage, 161 kilometers. If not, then yeah, breakaway it will be. The last 10 kilometers, unfortunately, we don't have access to Velo Viewer anymore. So it can be quite difficult without a lot of homework to know exactly what the last 10 kilometers, 5 kilometers are like. They are uphill. How uphill they are, certainly I didn't hear anyone today, Danny, talking about this being an opportunity for maybe Joao Almeida to nick a few seconds. I don't think that's the case.
It doesn't seem to. What we know, not just the... We don't know about the last 10 kilometers, but we do know about the last 2.3 kilometers, and it's just with a 3% gradient, so it's uphill, but not that hard.
They wouldn't even drop you or me on that, Danny. I think they actually would, quite comfortably. Anyway, we shall see. We shall see. Hopefully, we'll be back same time, more or less same time tomorrow, with a full report on a full stage of the Vuelta a España. Until then.
Until then. Hasta mañana.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.